So yesterday, after the New York Giants lost the game that's really mathematically impossible to lose, a game in which they scored three touchdowns, did not allow any touchdowns, and lost the football game, I immediately texted Tiki. I said, Tiki, with all your connections in the NFL and CBS, I'm just fascinated. Has a team ever lost a game in which they scored three touchdowns and didn't allow any? And it took Tiki like 45 minutes, and I'm convinced you're the first one to have it, even though it's gone rapid now, everyone has it, that this was actually only the second scenario in the history of football and the first scenario where it happened in regulation where a team lost a game while scoring three touchdowns and not allowing any.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, very rare. So it has happened one time in the postseason, but not in the regular season. So I reached out to Sean Ahern, who is our stat guy over at CBS Sports. He got right back to me, or whatever it was, 20 minutes later. I was in the car. That's probably why it took me longer to send it to you. I was driving to Bruce, by the way. My first time seeing Bruce.
Overrated?
He was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Look, I don't know a ton of Bruce's music, but down on the beach at Asbury Park, it was awesome. It was like a quarter mile of people on the beach. There were boats, which I felt sorry for because it was so rocky. It was windy, but there were boats out in the water listening to him. I only knew maybe four songs.
Born to Run. He did a little Born to Run.
He did do Born to Run, and he did Jersey Girl at the end, which he rarely does. But it was awesome. I didn't know the music, but it was awesome.
Does Bruce in the summer do Santa Claus is Coming to Town?
No,
that's one of his massive hits.
It was great. I saw Charles Way.
Oh, nice.
He was down there with his wife, who was the lieutenant governor, Taisha Way. Wow. And then I was with Governor Murphy and First Lady Murphy. So it was cool.
Dude, you're something else. So listen to what Tiki did yesterday before we finish this whole point. He called a football game. He's partying with the governor, watching Bruce Springsteen.
I'm just watching the movie. Watching the show.
And then still managed to watch two in its entirety local football games. Like, you are the busiest man in America.
Hey, it's Tiki Barber. It's the beauty of technology.
Yes.
It really allows me to catch up so quickly.
Oh, dude, I took advantage of it yesterday, too. I'm certainly not you, but Jets and Giants are playing at the same time. I watched the Jet game.
Right.
I watched the Mets game.
But anyway, the point was, I asked Sean, I was like, this has to have happened before, right? And he said, well, you're right, in the regular season. And he sent me the thing that I sent to our group chat, which is the Giants are the first team in NFL regular season history to score three touchdowns, allow none, and lose the football game. It did happen in an overtime game a few years ago. What year was that?
1989.
Right.
It was 23-21. The Rams lost to the Vikings in that situation where they scored three, didn't allow any, and still managed to lose. So here's the reality of that game yesterday for the Giants.
I was trying to figure out, how do you get to 23?
I have the answer for you.
Go ahead.
The game ended on an, are you ready for this?
Go ahead.
That game ended on an overtime safety.
Get out.
Yeah. I swear to God. Wow. They call it a walk-off safety.
I was at a game that ended that way.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Nuts.
A walk-off safety.
That's so pretty epic.
So after losing a game like this, and as we discussed to open the show, you can rewind on the Odyssey app, the whole conundrum with the kicker situation, Brian Daboll was asked a question about his job security. We will play the clip and also describe how he handled it after. Mm. The question was asked by former New York Ranger beat writer Pat Leonard.
Are you concerned about your job if the results don't change?
Yeah, I mean, I've done this for a long time, Pat. You know, my focus is on our football team.
Then Brian stared at him while another question was being asked. He gave him a death stare. And while I disagreed with the way Daboll handled the questions about the kicker, I got no problem with him giving a death stare.
Right.
The guy asked about his job status.
Right. In week two.
In week two.
What are we even talking about?
And what do you think he's going to say? Yes, I'm worried.
Oh, yeah.
Please, Mr. Marrett, don't fire me.
I think I'm going to get fired because I suck. Like, seriously, what do you want him to say? It's just, I mean, you barely ask that question at week 10 or 11. So, like, week two? Mm. I mean, come on.
It's one of those things where I think we as fans will always talk about, boy, if this season goes bad, will we fire the coach? We as Jet fans have talked about that. Like, if the Jets miss the playoffs, see you later, Robert Saleh. And so, yes, Giant fans are talking amongst themselves. We took a caller about it earlier. Hey, should they fire Brian Daboll? Now, doing that 2 weeks into the season is ridiculous, but is that a discussion where his seat is getting warmer in the eyes of Giant fans? Of course. I just wonder what the hell you expect him to say.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you can't answer it. The only thing you can do is say, I'm worried about winning. I'm worried about our season now.
That's the only answer.
It's the only answer. And so, like, you know, and again, this goes back to my point. If you're going to ask even a legitimate question, Dave's is not going to give you an answer.
Right? Let alone a question about his job status.
You're going to ask an asinine question like that. What do you think's going to happen?
I got no issue with the death stare. I will tell you that it was my first year doing middays with Joe Beningo, and we had the head coach of the then New Jersey Nets on, Lawrence Frank. Uh-huh. I was done with Lawrence Frank. Okay. I was done
How
with
many
him.
Years had it been?
At that point, he had been the coach for about 5 years.
Okay. Okay. You have the right to be done.
Oh, thank you. So Lawrence was on, and I was like, I got to ask him. I got to ask him about how I want him fired. But how do I ask him? So I said, I think I channeled Beningo.
That's dirty.
Well, I was being honest. Like, should I not ask him? So I said, Lawrence, appreciate everything you've done here. I think this team needs to make a move. What do you think? And his answer was probably the best answer one could give when someone confronts you about being fired. His answer was, what, have you been talking to my wife lately? She agrees with you.
Oh, my God. That's actually solid.
Because
that's a solid response.
L. Frank knew, I'm just going to be funny.
Right.
I'm going to disarm everybody.
Right. I'm going to deflect and disarm.
And after he says that, how do you not laugh?
You can't help but laugh. And then what did he say afterwards?
He said, no, I totally understand it. Yeah. We're struggling. We got to play better. It's a part of the business.
Right.
Part of the business is we got to perform, and clearly we need to perform more. No, dude, it was one of the greatest answers
right.
you could ever
because
get.
Now what he says is not taken with he's mad answering. He's defiantly answering it.
Right.
You know he's just joking.
Yeah.
Jokingly answering it.
Dave should have done the same thing.
Yeah, like, but Dave, it's not his personality, though.
Well, that's not true because... Remember when he joked the last time? I'll never forget this. And I called you out about it. Not called you out about it.
Oh,
I
this was the wink thing.
The wink stuff. He started making the dumbest jokes about how they fight over pizza.
Yeah.
Because there were reports about an issue between Wink and Dable, which obviously turned out to
right.
be true. And Dable, when confronted about it,
I see.
Made cheesy jokes about how they fight over pizza.
So I see what you're saying.
So Dable to that kind of, and it is a little bit of a douchey question
it's
by Pat.
It's his tell.
Yeah.
If he starts joking about it and making light, it's a tell.
Oh, that means he really is worried about
yes.
it.
Yes.
So maybe then he shouldn't have made a joke.
I guess that's what I mean.
But Brian could have responded, well, Pat, my wife agrees. She thinks I've done a terrible job.
But this is where Dable needs to be a little careful because I'm in favor of him staying. But the reason he's getting asked a question like that, which is, I think, a douchey question to ask, is because he is short with the media. So now they're just seeing, you know, lamb on spigots here with him. And they're going to keep asking dumb questions to see if he snaps.
Hmm.
You know, like he's done them no favors, so now they're going to treat him like a jerk.
I will warn Brian Daboll this. And I don't think he's done this yet, by the way. So this is just a friendly warning. We can minimize what a coach says to the media and say it doesn't matter just when. I'm old enough to remember, because it was only 2 years ago, a head coach that talked himself out of a job.
Yeah.
And that guy was Joe Judge.
But that was at the end of a season, and it felt like he was not trying to win a football game.
Yeah, I agree with you. Look, there were a lot of other issues, but it really felt like Joe Judge was going to remain the head coach, that the losing on the field was not going to cost him his job. But he gave such horrible answers, especially blaming the dead guy, as I like to say,
yeah.
that he talked himself out of a job. I don't think Brian's done that. I don't think Brian will do that, but I'd be very careful because the more the losses come, the more, excuse my French, douchey questions you're going to get.
True.
And you got to field them with care.
I think the other thing that hurt Joe Judge is that the GM was going. Right? It was the end of the GM. You knew that that was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're going to make a change, they're kind of tied. Right? It's a new-ish type of like understanding, but I think it's starting to become a bigger part of the NFL. If you're a GM mm-hmm. and you hire your coach, you're tied to that guy.
Yeah, no, I can see that.
And I think it should be that way. So I think with Gettleman leaving, Joe Judge, it would have been unfair to the new GM to saddle
but
him
he
with
was,
Joe Judge.
You're right, but he was going to stay until he started making comments that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way.
True, but I think it just highlighted the fact that a new GM's going to have to deal with this now.
Right, right, right. You can't tell a new GM,
right.
this is your head coach.
It's one thing to say, hey, new GM, John Harbaugh, it's happened. I think Ozzie Newsom, you know, retired. John Harbaugh is your head coach. Thank you so much.
right, right.
right. You know what I mean?
Look at this present I got.
Thank you so much. It's Christmas.
Let's go to Jody in Warren, New Jersey. What's up, Jody?
Hey, guys. You know, Tiki, I know when you say it's just Dave's, I get all that.
Yep.
But there's a way to handle the press that's important.
Oh, of course.
And believe it, I get it. Coaching is what they're hired for. But maybe they should also, like, take a training like a politician does on how you come across on TV.
I don't think it's a training thing. Important. I think that's just how he wants to be perceived. And so I'm not saying that he shouldn't answer these questions more forthright and be more accepting to the media. But what I was saying was that I know how he's going to respond. So I can't listen to anything he says in the media and get something from it. Because I know it's just a response to placate, you know, whoever's listening to those things. And I get all of his transcripts. I try to listen to some of his comments, but I don't get anything out of them.
He's very Belichick-like in that regard.
Yeah, I'm not a doctor.
There's no information that I can make a determination about something on.
That answer, that I'm not a doctor answer.
Yeah.
It's one of the dumbest answers I've heard.
But it's factually correct.
But that he's not a doctor.
Yes.
It's factually correct that he doesn't have a doctor.
But at least he can say, I'm not lying. He's not lying.
He wasn't lying, but it was insulting when someone asks him, hey.
What was the question that he answered?
You put him out there with a groin injury.
Right.
And then he pulled his hamstring, and Dable's like, well, yeah, hamstring. Well, it's not a groin. Like, he almost tried to explain it away, like one thing's not related to the other. And I think most of us would understand that if you have a groin issue, that could lead to a hamstring issue.
Well, it's going to lead to something else.
It's going to lead to something.
Huh?
And so his answer was, I'm not a doctor.
I mean, but seriously, like,
what?
You have a groin issue.
Yeah.
You're not, it's not like you're running 50 yards or 20 yards or you're just kicking a ball.
Yeah, but he ended up running those yards because he was trying to tackle Austin Eckler when he broke off the kick return for a potential touchdown.
I guess so, because he technically becomes the safety
valve.
That's
why you don't use him as kicker.
Yeah,
like, but as the kickoff guy. Like, that was one of the mistakes he made. If you didn't want to have him active, obviously that's the easy solution.
Yeah.
Or you want to have a backup active, that's another easy solution. But if you're going to go out there without any protections, why is he kicking off?
Yeah.
Have Jamie Gillen do it.
Well, I agree, but I think with Gillen's last kickoff, I think that maybe would be one of the reasons, because he's just not used to doing it that consistently. But, I mean, this is crazy. This is 2 years in a row then.
Yeah.
That a return has caused a massive injury.
It's also 2 years in a row where Brian Daboll has mismanaged the health of Graham Gano, and it's cost them a game.
Sure, but I'm talking about Andrew Thomas on the return.
That is true.
And now another return. This is why you just kick the ball in the end zone.
Yes.
Right? I get the dynamic kickoff rule. I understand that they want to increase the returns. It's gone up 8 percentage points from, you know, just only 2 weeks into the season. Last year it was 21.5% or 21.8% returns. This year it's 30% returns. Just kick it in the end zone.
That's where
it's not worth that.
I agree with you. Let's go to Joe in Staten Island. How are you, Joe?
Hey, guys. My question, Tiki, maybe you can help me out with this one. Dan Duggan keeps tweeting that the Giants only dressed 51 guys week one and 52 this week to save cap space. Wouldn't it behoove them to dress a backup kicker and a backup returner in the last 2 weeks?
I don't know if you need a backup returner, because you can just throw guys back there. You got a couple running backs, extra wide receivers. You can throw them back there for the returners. The kicker is an interesting dilemma, because by dressing a kicker, you potentially take a special teams guy off of, or backup lineman. But if you're going to guess health, and I think some teams do this, we see it every week, where they'll have like two backup offensive linemen up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, and the other ones, even though they're on the roster, they'll be inactive, not practice squad. They're just on the roster, inactive. And it's like, man, you are cutting it close. Because if you lose three offensive linemen, what the hell are you doing?
Right.
And so it's a numbers game, and it's calculated every week, I think. In retrospect, yeah, you should have an extra kicker, especially with your starting kicker hurt. But you just trust that Graham Gano's not going to hurt his hamstring.
If you're Brian Daboll and you have a kicker with a bad groin, you have to do something.
Or just tell him, even if there is a return,
Don't do anything.
Don't go get him. It's like with quarterbacks.
Yes.
Like, they tell quarterbacks, if you throw an interception, and unless it's like right in front of you, don't go try to seek him down.
Absolutely.
Because what's going to happen is that you're going to get teed off on.
Right.
And might hurt yourself.
Right. It's not worth it.
It's not worth it.
Like, Aaron Rodgers, the Jets had one wildcat call. I don't know if you guys remember this in the game.
Did.
And Aaron Rodgers was lined up wide, and he didn't move.
Yeah.
Like, he stood there, because nothing he could do would be worth it.
Mm-mm.
So the mistake Daboll made was, you had five different things you could do to respond to Graham Gano having a bad groin. You could just not play him. You could elevate a backup. You could tell him you're not going to be a part of kickoffs. You could tell him if you're going to be a part of kickoffs, A, don't get involved, and B, boom it through the end zone. And the fifth option was, don't just give up on kicking extra points. Take the risk that Drew Lock and Jamie Gillen could actually get an extra point through.
Right.
And Brian Daboll did none of that.
So let's get to the crux of this, because I think we all agree Brian Daboll's not an idiot, right? He's not an idiot. He is coaching, though, like he has a lifetime contract. Like, oh, you know what? We're going to draft a quarterback. We're going to be around here for 3 or 4 years. I'm going to put my feet up during Hard Knocks, literally, figuratively. He keeps making the same mistakes year in and year out. He's not being aggressive. He's asked about job security. How dare you ask that? He's lost to the Commanders. And this guy acts like he's going to get another 5 years here. First it was Wink. Then it was Kafka. Now it's the quarterback. It's another built-in excuse. Seriously, like this guy, coach, are we going to have Aaron Boone and Brian Cashman here again, where we're just going to run our organization with two guys that just could do whatever the heck they want, and there's no accountability?
I don't think he's entirely safe. I don't know where you get that from.
I get that.
We're two games into the season. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to fire
because
him now, this season goes bad. Like, yeah, he could
be
fired.
Talked about hot seat before the year, and Tiki was like, well, they're not on the hot seat going into this season.
Well, because they're not. They're not.
Well, hold on a second. Both of you can be right at the same time. I don't think he went into a season on the hot seat. I don't think Joe Judge went into his season on the hot seat. But things can change.
Yeah.
If this team wins 3 games, he's probably done.
Joe Judge coached him and talked himself into being fired.
Absolutely. And could that happen with Brian Daboll? I just talked about it. Yeah. I saw a guy talk himself out of a job.
Right.
I don't think there's any indication he has a lifetime contract. I think right now, as he enters year 3, sure, he's not. First of all, the whole phrasing is a guy on the hot seat. What the hell does that even mean?
I know.
Like, let the season happen, and trust me, I'll have a strong opinion on if he should come back. You'll have a strong opinion on if he should come back. We're 2 games into the freaking season.
I agree.
If they go 2-15, I can guarantee you I'm going to come on the radio in January and say, get rid of his ass.
Right.
Now, you may disagree. We may have a good argument about it, but we're 2 weeks into the season.
But is there
so what makes you think he has a lifetime contract?
Because isn't there a path to both of them, Shane and Daboll, politicking behind the scenes to Marisol?
Politicking.
Saying, John, we can't win with this quarterback. There's no way. And he going, you know what? You're right. We won't say this publicly.
Well,
we're going to allow you guys to draft a quarterback. Okay, so you go through the motions this season.
I don't know about Joe Shane and Brian Daboll politicking. Like, I have no idea what they are behind the scenes. But I can speak for myself as just a football fan, as an IFO. There is a part of me that needs to see Brian Daboll with his quarterback.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. Now,
right.
That is not me saying he has a lifetime contract, because things can go badly enough to where they got to get rid of him.
Yeah.
But I don't think 2 weeks into the season, A, he should definitely be back next year, or B, he should definitely be gone. We're 2 weeks into the season. He's wearing a paper bag over his head. Loogie wants him fired. What the hell's wrong with everybody?
I don't know.
Here's the problem.
Calm the hell down.
R-E-L-A-X.
I think
that's
he's...
That's an Aaron Rodgers thing.
Tommy's jumping a little too much quickly on the Daboll thing. I think he should draft the quarterback, but we
got... You got a freaking bag on your head,
because
bro.
Here's the thing, though. This is the problem, Tiki. We got to stop today.
Before we continue, we will let everybody continue. I just need to reset that. Sean said, and I quote, I think Loogie's going a little too far. As he speaks with a paper bag over his head.
I know.
Continue, sir.
I'm disgusted and disgraced. I think he's going a little too far with Daboll. My point is, I think the rhetoric we've had around here, it's only 2 games, they're 0-2, is almost insulting to Giant fans.
Okay, no, hold on. Last week, the problem is you guys don't listen to me. You're just like, remember when I told you guys about Sam Darnold?
Yes.
Just remember.
Yeah.
Don't take victory laps yet, Tiki. It's two weeks.
It's a good start.
You're off to an amazing start.
For Sam Darnold.
You have bases loaded, nobody out.
Okay.
I'll give you
what
that.
What did I tell you last week? What did I tell you about the Giants last week? What did it look like?
It looked like a preseason.
Oh, great. What did this week look like? They ran the ball pretty well.
Yeah, it looked like improvement. Right? It looked like every game they play versus the Commanders.
But whatever. I'm not even talking about the opponent. I'm just talking about the execution.
No,
they looked
it was better
this week.
It was better.
Malik Nabers had 18 targets.
And the offensive line looked better. Look, there were definitely positives to lean on, but here's the truth. We spent an entire offseason, or at least since the schedule came out, pointing to those first 2 games and said, if the Giants start off 0-2 versus the Vikings and Commanders, they're going to be in real trouble. And that is where it becomes like, oh my God, how bad is this going to get? And
trouble,
here we are.
Real trouble relative to what? Making the postseason? Of course they are. But
yes.
You know who else is 0-2? The Cincinnati Bengals.
Right. Baltimore Ravens.
You know who else? The Baltimore Ravens.
And if Lamar Jackson and Joe Burrow were here, I'd feel a lot better about that. And this isn't a slight on Daniel Jones. The point is...
He played better. I know his completion percentage was low. And
people will
look at that and say, oh, he only completed 17 passes or whatever it may have been. I forget what the number is. But he played a lot better.
I'm with you on Jones.
Made good decisions.
Yes.
Got rid of the ball on time. Right? Yeah. And so, like, I think they looked better.
I do, too.
They gave up too many big plays defensively. Six, I think, 20-plus yard plays.
Two third and 13s on the same drive. That can't happen.
Exactly.
But it's not even about making the playoffs at this point. Like, if they somehow great. The point is, how bad does it get because the schedule gets that much tougher? And how does the coach then handle the losses, even if the team's playing better?
Sean, here's what I would say, and I think Tiki agrees with me, even though he'll probably be more steadfast in not wanting to fire the head coach. Maybe I'll be quicker on the trigger. 2 weeks into the season, it is fair to criticize him. I think we've done that for about an hour and a half,
yeah,
especially the decisions around the kicking. But firing a guy 2 weeks into the season?
I agree. I think it's a stupid question.
It doesn't make sense to me.
And what I go back to 2 years ago, or a year ago when we first started this show. I made a flipping comment to you guys. I got attacked by all three of you, which was, we don't know about Brian Daboll. I've seen coaches after one good year, things go bad quickly. And Tiki was like, I won coach of the year. Sean was like, the guy won coach of the year. What are you doing? Loogie, coach of the year. What are you doing? And I said, no. Everything's great. He's off to a great start. I've just been around long enough to see how quickly things can turn, okay? Right now, yeah, it feels like it's turning. I'll be the first to tell you. Brian Daboll is being talked about in a way that he was not talked about, at least for most of last year, and certainly in his first year. Things can change quickly.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean he's going to be gone at the end of the year. No, what does this season look
there
like?
There were a lot of people who were trying to fire him last year, too.
I think this is
a lot of this is a hangover from last year.
Definitely.
You got to absolutely believe
it. It started
that
to change a little bit last year. You are right. I'll give you that.
And so, to me, it's not even about Dave's. It's about organizational instability when you're constantly changing coaches. Now, if you think you have a good duo, GM, head coach, and I do think they are good, it showed it in the first year, I think. The improvement on the roster, even though it's not elite, it's not on the level of, you know, some of the top teams in football, but they're a good team. They have a good coaching staff. Like, talking about just getting rid of that and starting over, especially with the name that keeps getting thrown out there, is like nauseating.
What
to
name
me.
Are you talking about?
You know, it's Bill Belichick.
Oh.
That's all anybody wants to talk about.
Wow.
And I'm just like, do you not watch the New Orleans Saints? Right? Do you not watch the Houston Texans? Do you not watch some of these other unbelievable coordinators who are the right age and have the right mindset? Instead, you want to go with Bill Belichick because he was a Giant. He's always going to. It never makes sense to me when I hear it. And I'm not just talking about for the Giants. I'm talking about for any team that's looking at Bill Belichick. And this is not disrespect on Bill Belichick, but the game is moved. It's different. Right? His philosophy and organizational building is second to none, and there will never be anyone that does it as good as he did it in New England. But I don't think that's what a lot of organizations are looking for right now.
We will get to Joe Beningo. He joins us at 4 o'clock. His thoughts on what happened over the weekend with the Jets, getting a big victory and evening up their record to 1-1. We'll get back to your Giant and Jet calls at 888-808-1019. I've watched a lot of baseball over my lifetime. But what I witnessed on Saturday afternoon was fascinating and also really, really pathetic. We all know that Rafael Devers has owned Gerrit Cole. All right? It's an obvious fact. The stats are overwhelming. Cole knows it. Devers knows it. Cole was even asked recently, like, I think it's Latin American Heritage Month, and he was asked, hey, which Latin player do you hate facing? And he did not even let the question get finished asking, and he said Rafael Devers. And Rafael Devers not only kills Gerrit Cole, he kills the Yankees. If you recall back in July, many Yankee fans were upset that the Yankees didn't intentionally walk Rafael Devers in a 0-0 game. I think it was the 7th with Luis Gil on the mound. We even talked about it right here on this show. I gave you the stats on why you should never walk him. Tiki agreed with me. You don't walk him.
Right.
Loogie, to his credit, was you got to walk Devers. You can't let Devers beat you. That was 0-0 in the 7th inning of a baseball game with Luis Gil on the mound. What we saw on Saturday, for those that missed it, the Yankees are winning 4-0. It's the top of the 4th inning. Gerrit Cole is dominating. There's one out and nobody on. And this image is now embedded in my head for the rest of time.
This one?
Yeah. Tiki's holding up his fingers. Gerrit Cole, standing on the mound with that look. And I love Gerrit Cole. I mean, I got to premise that. I think he's a great pitcher. I think he's going to be a Hall of Famer someday. Love watching the man pitch. He's a student of the game. He's a professor. Blah, blah, blah. You get the point. All right? He's great.
Okay.
I've defended him a lot. Clutch pitcher, all that. When he stuck up his four fingers and then very, like, arrogantly did the Mike Francesa hand wave of, ah, get out of here. I go to first base, okay? I'm not dealing with you, kid. I was actually napping, and it was a rare moment. I got to nap during the day, and I jumped out of my seat, and I was like, what? What the hell just happened? And then for him to then proceed to collapse, Devers steals second. He walks Tyler O'Neill, which can't happen. Yoshida hits a double. Abreu gets a hit. And then what happened the following inning with Devers coming up with the bases loaded and Cole having no choice but to face him and Cole ripping a double? I thought that was sad.
You mean Devers ripping a double off of Cole?
Off of Cole?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that his decision to wimp out and not face Rafael Devers in that situation was actually one of the saddest things I've ever seen on a mound. I felt bad for him.
Well, you know what the problem is with it, Evan, is that it becomes self-defeating. It becomes, like, in your mind, all you can... It takes over your thought process.
Right.
So it's no surprise that all of what you just described happened. Because Gerrit Cole is a creature of his peculiarities, right? Mm-hmm. He has all these little things that he does. And the reason he does those is because it keeps him dialed in, right? He's just like, I'm attacking, I'm attacking, I'm attacking, I'm attacking. And as soon as he like takes a respite and throws up those four fingers and it's like, I'm not attacking, I'm conceding.
Yeah, I'm conceding.
All of a sudden, everything else falls apart.
You took away his killer instinct.
Exactly. All of that just specific killer instinct just falls away.
Mm.
And you shouldn't have been surprised that he all of a sudden lost it, whatever that it was.
No, I'm not surprised. And remember, he kind of gave us a hint because in the first inning of this game, he drilled Rafael Devers, which I thought was tough. And by the way, that's what he should have done in the fourth inning.
Yeah, and by the way, that's aggressive still.
Yes. If you don't want to face him because he's great, just drill him. Now, we'll get back to what Gerrit Cole did, but you've been waiting all day for it. I've been waiting all day for it. We have a Francisco Lindor update from Francisco Lindor himself. The only thing I know is he's not in the lineup tonight, which is not a surprise. We know about Lindor. He left Friday night's game early with a back issue, did not play Saturday, started Sunday, got a leadoff hit, walked very gingerly to first base after the hit, played his position in the bottom of the first inning, and then came out of the game going into the bottom of the second inning. Here is what Francisco Lindor has to say about his back.
How you doing, Francisco?
I'm great. I'm great. I still have a little bit of pain, but we had good news. Everything seems like it's good. You know, it could be 3 to 5 days, or it could be 2 to 3. It depends on how my back reacts. The trainers they have an amazing game plan, and then it's going to be up to Mendy and if I feel okay to play.
All right. So. That is good news, because obviously the worst piece of news would have been the MRI showing something structurally wrong with his back.
Which you never, I think, see when people have back issues. It's always like a complicated mix of things that don't necessarily show up on imaging.
Backs are very complicated.
Right, they're very complicated.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it could be something minor. It could be, honestly, we're talking about like Graham Gano's hamstring. It could be a tight hamstring.
Right.
Or a tight IT band, or something like your hip alignment is just a little bit off. Which is not going to really show itself on an image, but you could still have serious, I don't want to say debilitating, but like, I can't do my job type of pain.
Yeah, this doesn't get Lindor out of the woods by any stretch.
No.
But it's like one little check mark. Check mark, okay, we're not being put out of our misery that he's going to need back surgery and he's Ben Simmons and we won't see him in a year and a half. So Lindor says, you know, everything's great. Now, he is a very smiley guy, he's a very happy guy, he's a very optimistic guy, he's like Tommy, positive Francisco, positive Tommy. But I hear 2 to 3 days, I hear 3 to 5 days. Here's the way they've got to handle it. It's very simple to start. He's out for this series against the Nationals. Mm. I think it's start right there. He's not available. You have Luis Angel Acuña here. Now, Luis Angel Acuña is not in the lineup tonight. Eddie Alvarez is, with Iglesias at shortstop. I disagree with that, but more on that at a later time. I think you sit him against Washington, not because you're arrogant.
Acuña at second?
No, Acuña's not even playing.
Who's at second?
Eddie Alvarez.
Oh, Alvarez.
Speed skater.
Got it.
Yeah,
got it.
I think that it's not arrogance against Washington. It's being careful. He clearly has a back issue. He still has pain, like he said. And the only way, I've learned this with my own back issues, even though I'm far from being a professional athlete, is you need to rest. So Francisco Lindor needs to rest. In fact, he shouldn't even be in the dugout. He should be laying down on a bed doing stretching exercises.
But sometimes that's worse.
Probably.
Laying on a bed.
And also, he's really valuable to everybody because he's got good information.
Right.
So, sure, he should be out there.
He should be stretching.
But...
doing light strengthening exercises.
Absolutely.
With the band.
But I think you have to wipe him out for this three-game series against Washington. You have your fingers crossed that he could be ready for Thursday or Friday against Philadelphia. But honestly, I think it's about Atlanta. I think that's the way you got to look at it. And look, are the Mets good enough to survive without Francisco Lindor? They better be.
Against the Nationals, they better be.
Yeah.
That's the point.
Against the Nationals, they better be. And look, even against the Phillies, there's talent on this roster. Pete Alonso's had a disappointing season. Wake up. J.D. Martinez has had a somewhat
that.
Disappointing season.
You keep
wake
saying
up.
It. It's not happening.
How do you know that?
I don't, but it hasn't.
I understand it hasn't. Doesn't mean it can over the last 13 games.
Yeah, but saying Pete Alonso wake up is not going to make Pete Alonso wake up.
By the way, you know what's funny about Pete Alonso? Pete Alonso is not slumping. He actually had two hits yesterday.
But he's not been great.
He hasn't been impactful.
Right.
Like, they need
that's a better way.
Dominant, slugging Pete Alonso. And that may seem unfair, but that's the reality.
It's who he is. It's what you're expecting from
him. That's what they need from him.
Yes.
And look, sometimes you get hot at the weirdest times. Sometimes you get hot at the right time. Sometimes you get cold at the wrong time. But they need guys to step up without him. Lindor has carried this team for months. Maybe that's where he got his back issue. But they can overcome this. I don't want to hear injuries as an excuse. I don't want to hear from you, Positive Tommy. Don't give me injuries. The Braves are ravaged by injuries.
Positive Tommy.
I don't want to hear it.
Positive Tommy doesn't give excuses. He just spins things positively. By the way, no joke. Lindor got hurt on the road, so he's sleeping in a hotel, probably at like a Hampton Inn. I'm sure he has a good posturepedic master's.
The Mets are at a Hampton Inn.
He better not be at a Hampton Inn.
My point is you know Francisco Lindor has a sweet mattress at home. I'm being dead serious. Like, you're sleeping at a hotel with a bad back. Now you're home. You can sleep at home. You're with your wife and kid again. So that could be good for the back, right, Mr. Back?
Evan, you know what I would have done if I'm Lindor? Mm-hmm. If that's true that his mattress is so much better than the one in Philadelphia, I would have freaking taken an airplane back, slept at home, and then
well, that,
back
that's the other part about it, too. You're at a dump in Philadelphia. When me and Sean stayed there for the Knicks Sixer game, they called us. Sean could back me up on this to remind us that no guns are allowed on the premises. Like, we have the steel on us at the time.
Are you comparing where you stayed to Francisco Lindor and Major League
I'm saying Philadelphia is an absolute dump, and I guarantee you there's no nice hotels there.
By the way, that could be anywhere. You guys know this is a serious story. Outside of our hotel Saturday night, someone got shot and killed.
Oh, jeez, really?
Right. They think it was... It's in a posh area in Baltimore.
Right.
They think it was gang-related, but it woke up... Not me, because I was on the other side of the building, but Andrew and AJ Ross, our sideline girl, woke them up.
Scary, man.
People in the... Raiders were staying in the hotel right across the street.
Right.
And so, I mean, it was terrifying.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
Oh, I can imagine. So, you're in a gunshot in the middle of the night like that?
Right.
Scary stuff.
So how about that Lindor mattress?
Yeah. All right, so what the hell's your point, Tommy? I'm just very confused. So he has a better mattress at home?
The point is that if you have a bad back, Evan, you have one, I'm sure it is a lot better to sleep at home on a really nice mattress than it is in a hotel room.
Okay.
Yeah, but they're nice hotels.
But Tiki, come on. People have mattresses that fit their back.
What's your point?
My point is that the power of positivity and the power of the posturepedic will cure the back issue. He'll be back in a day or two.
Here's why
not positive about hotels, by the way.
Here's why the power of positivity is officially dead for me. On Friday night, the Mets beat the Philadelphia Phillies. It was a great, great win. They exploded on Aaron Nola. It was amazing to watch. They won the game 11-3. So I do a Rico after that win. Very excited. Lindor left that game early. And positively, because I want to be positive as much as I'm not, I said, I'm not worried about Lindor. He should be okay. He always plays. I expect him to be in the lineup. I'm enjoying this victory because I am not worried about Francisco Lindor. Yeah. And I know what you're all thinking. I'm a schmuck, and I apologize. That's why being positive, like, it just doesn't work. I gave you your positivity. On Friday night, I was like, he's fine. Meanwhile, he doesn't play Saturday. He plays 13 minutes on Sunday, now he's telling us, I'll be back at some point.
Positivity does more than make you believe is that it makes you cope better when things go wrong or poorly.
Well, who's coping right now?
I'm just saying, it just when you're expecting the worst and then you get the worst, like, you're already down, you go farther down.
Right.
When you're expecting, like, you're positive and it, things go bad, it kind of just brings you neutral.
Well, you know
what I mean? That makes sense.
Not really, but I understand it. The bottom line is we don't know anything about injuries. And so I don't want to be positive or negative after an injury because we don't know. And we don't know with a back. Like, we have no idea when this guy's going to come back. And the truth is, look at the Atlanta Braves, the team we malign, the team that is tied with the Mets for the third wild card spot.
Right.
They have been ravaged by injuries. There is no excuse. They are still standing on pace to win 90 games.
Yeah, but they're also exactly where you are.
Okay.
Exactly where...
But that's my point. Yeah. Like, you can overcome injuries. Look at the Arizona Diamondbacks.
But hold on.
Christian Walker, Ketel Marte, like... Right, you have to overcome them.
But Evan, hold on. You're saying that they can overcome.
Yeah.
They can overcome injuries.
Yeah.
They're exactly where you are.
I know.
They're exactly where the Mets are.
What are you missing my point? So why overcome the injuries?
So why are the Mets in such more in a much more dire strait?
What? I'm saying that they need to overcome the injuries. What the hell do you think I'm saying?
They're playing the same kind of baseball.
They've had Lindor the entire season. Now they may be without him. I'm merely saying
and the Braves have a better pitching staff.
Okay, so what are you arguing with me about?
Tiki's saying the Braves have come back to where the Mets are because of the injuries they've had. The Mets have risen up, haven't had to deal with it.
I know, and I'm saying you can overcome them. The Arizona Diamondbacks have.
You know how they can overcome it, Evan? When one Lindor closes, another one opens. Next man up.
All right. Everybody's annoying me right now. Like, I'm annoyed at everybody. All I'm saying is, it's not very good. He's wearing a paper bag over his
head. You're annoying me, actually, Evan, because here's why. You attack the power of positivity. Let's say you have somebody in your life that, God forbid, gets hurt or gets sick. Don't you send them well wishes? So why, when it's an athlete, we say, be quiet about it?
I just did. I told you on Friday I was very positive. He's played one inning since then. Like, what do you want from me?
But I
gave you what you wanted.
But you did the right thing, though.
Oh,
I think that's my point, is that you feel like you did the wrong thing. You did the right thing. You sent him best wishes.
Okay, and now I'm proceeding to say, and you don't seem to understand it. I don't think Tiki understands it. All I'm saying is, overcome it now. I'm not talking about Lindor. I'm talking about the rest of the team.
Yeah.
Like, we have seen teams throughout baseball overcome injuries. That's what you've got to do. This team is capable of that. Now, do they need individual players like Brandon Nimmo to get hot right now? Yes. Do they need Pete Alonso to go on a home run streak? Yes. Do they need J.D. Martinez, who's been moved up in the batting order, to kind of show us who J.D. Martinez is? Yes. Do they need Jesse Winker to haunt his favorite team? Yes. It's not impossible. I'm not giving up. It sucks that Lindor's out. What I'm merely reminding you is that look around baseball. Teams have injuries. They have to overcome it. This is not an excuse. Go do it. You know, I heard Knicks fans give me excuses for why they lost to Indiana. I'm not a Knicks fan. I don't make excuses. There is no excuse for the Mets on this 7-game homestand, whether Lindor plays one game or he plays 4 games. Go do it.
But I think what Tommy's saying and what I'm agreeing with is that there's nothing you can do about it except for watch with positivity.
Positive Tiki. I love it.
I love it. Evan, if they lose tonight, would you call it a national nightmare?
I think you're a national nightmare.
This guy's wearing a bag over his head, and I'm positive. We've covered all bases.
Joe Beningo's coming up next. His thoughts on the Jets' first victory in the Aaron Rodgers era, and his thoughts on Francisco Lindor. We'll get back to your telephone calls. A lot of Jets, a lot of Giants. 888-808-1019. And as we promised, we made specific stat predictions for Daniel Jones' performance on Sunday. We'll check how good we did. Evan and Tiki on the Fan.